Caroline.
Hey, Lisa.
So I'm really excited about this episode that is coming up. We got the opportunity to interview Julian Reed, who he was the musical director for Hamilton, sort of the planet's biggest musical, as far as I know, that has been produced to date. And he shared some really interesting, intimate details with us about his journey getting there, about what happened, and some really big life-changing events, including heart attacks and burnout. So there's some big drama in this episode.
Big stories, yes. And what I so his purpose now is to work towards pure burnouts, more burnout awareness. And what I really appreciate about how he talks about this is that he takes on the responsibility of sharing his own story, and he's open about that. And not only that, it's just the tone of his voice and the way he talks about it. I really appreciate it. It's not about, oh, something really bad happened to me, or oh, we should all be ashamed about this. This is part of life. This happens to certain people, and there's good things about it. There's certainly a lot of bad things about it. It's hard, it's painful. And what can we do to support people around this? And he's the matter of factness and the tone of it, and he's just nice. He's a lovely person. So I really like that about this conversation. How about you?
Yeah, I think this is such a worthy conversation. There is so much humanity, so much realness, and just a really honest story. So we look forward to all of you listening to it.
And he did some good eye openers and some really good tips too. Enjoy.
This is the People Impact Podcast. We are two visionary coaches passionate about having a positive impact on the way people lead and work together. This is for you if you're interested in expanding your perspective on the humans you work with and on yourself as a human being. For all of you out there who are interested in new perspectives, insights, and inspiration. Featuring Marjolein Fluch,
Hello, everyone.
myself, Lisa Dempsey. And today I'm very excited because we have a wonderful guest, Julian Reed, joining us today. Welcome, Julian.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, Julian. Happy to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, we know a little bit about your background and we'll dive into, I think, some of that, but give yourself an introduction. We'd love to hear a little bit more about who you are and what you're up to.
Sure, yeah, thanks for having me. Great to be here. So my name's Julian Reeve. I'm the CEO, founder of a company called Perfect Equilibrium. We specialize in stress and burnout management for organizations, and also for high achievers, entrepreneurs, founders, looking to find better balance, really, steer away from the stress that leads to burnout, and certainly in organizations, get organizations positioned well so that they can retain the talent that they spend so long looking for, and keep them healthy at the same time.
Yeah, what brought you here? What brought you to
What
do
brought me
here?
here? Great question. Well, I used to be a music director, which is obviously a very different profession. I grew up in a very musical family in Cambridge, England. And went on to specialize in music at university in Cambridge, and made that my profession. I was really in musical theatre. That was my main background. Did a lot of stuff in the West End, and then my wife and I moved to the States in 2012. We moved to New York City, and very long story short, I ended up becoming the music director for the Broadway musical Hamilton. On tour in the US. I worked on the Broadway production for 6 months, and then they asked me to take out the First National, which started in San Francisco. And that was an incredible experience. Everyone knows that Hamilton is much bigger than just a kind of musical theatre show, and I suppose I was involved, well, I was involved with it at the height of its success. But that kind of success brought a tremendous amount of pressure. And 3 months into the job, in San Francisco, I had a heart attack at the age of 43. which, good, as you can imagine, was a slight curveball. And so that is really, that was my kind of unlocking, if you like, of the door that led to what I now call perfect equilibrium and the work that I do.
Yeah, that's amazing. And how incredible to go through that huge transformation of, you know, I'm guessing when you were working with Hamilton, you were maybe feeling like you were at the top of your career, you were at the pinnacle of what you had been working so hard to do. What was that right, like for you?
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on. You know, I'd worked very hard for decades to get to the, you know, the top of the tree, the top 1% of my industry, and I kind of finally made it.
Yeah.
I've worked hard all of my life. I've had you know, two or three creative businesses as an entrepreneur, leading up to the heart attack, as well as all my work as a musician. I enjoyed work. I was very driven by it. In hindsight, a lot of my identity came from my work, and that probably pushed me to strive even harder. And I think, you know, the realization of the heart attack was that, you know, I'd largely gone through that journey blind. And what I mean by that is, you know, we think, I think as human beings, when we're driven, when we're ambitious, when we want to be successful, we're driven by goals, we're driven by metrics, we're driven by, you know, how much is in the bank account, you know, how, what car we drive, all forms of kind of financial success is denoted by things rather than kind of who we are within that process. And I think that was probably the biggest lesson that came out of all of this. And so the tricky bit from that point was kind of detaching the identity, detaching me from Hamilton, detaching me from entrepreneurism, from success in inverted commas, as we all know it to be, and then really breaking it down and going right back to basics in terms of what success and what success really means, and what it's supposed to mean for us as human beings rather than kind of strivers.
Yeah. So what
I think we're gonna ask the same thing.
Lots to say.
Go ahead.
What are some of those insights? What was that reframing of success and, you know, who you were and what you wanted to be about that happened through that process?
I think the biggest thing was the realization that success, as I now call it, this is very much part of perfect equilibrium, is focus on the journey to the result rather than just the result itself. I was really good at, you know, here's a show, learn it, perform it to the best standard you can, and then do all of that again tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And it was all about the result. But I had no idea. I mean, even when I was learning Hamilton, and I look back now and I just laugh and I'm like, wow, was I really this guy? And I was this guy. I would wake up and my immediate thought was practice. This was when I was learning the show for Broadway. Mm-hmm. My immediate thought was practice. So I would regularly get out of bed in my pajamas and go straight to the piano. My wife would get out of bed, make the coffee, have a shower, go out to work, come back from work 5 hours later, and I would still be in my pajamas at the piano practicing, having not eaten, having not had any water, having not had paid any consideration for me in the journey to the result. It was all about the result. And, you know, some of that caused the heart attack. So that, I think, was one of my bigger takeaways for sure.
And where do you think those habits, that mindset, that way of working, where did that come from?
I've always been, the work that I've done has always been quite solitary. So I've never kind of enjoyed a kind of community environment where, you know, you have to show up to the office rather than get out of bed in your pajamas and start work.
Right.
And so I suppose a lot of it was, you know, when you're successful in those kind of solitary environments, and this is kind of why I really enjoy the work that I do with entrepreneurs, because I've lived that existence. I know what that's like, particularly solopreneurship, where, you know, if we're successful, then we think what we're doing is right. And, you know, you can achieve success by getting out of bed and going straight to work in your pajamas. You can do it. Should you do it? No. But the point being that, you know, I didn't give myself and was never taught boundaries, healthy boundaries for which to achieve success. And it's funny how, you know, I grew up in the school system in England where very little focus on mental health. It was all about how to play your instrument, how to be the best music director, but it was very little associated with how you deal with the psychology of performance. And so I was never really given the tools to do what I needed to do in a healthy way. And that's a lot of the reason why I do what I do now.
Yeah, but before this recording, you said this is the responsibility you're taking on as well, sharing your story and making this your work now. Can you say a bit more about how you look at that now?
Yeah, I feel that responsibility very deeply, actually. You know, people ask me, don't you miss music? Don't you miss Hamilton? And there's a bit to the story which I should fill the listeners in on. Mm-hmm. So after the heart attack, I stayed with Hamilton for 18 months. And I figured out all sorts of really great ways to reframe my approach to success, because, you know, it was still a stressful environment. I still had to maintain the standards of the show to you know, the best Broadway show on the planet. You know, it wasn't exactly an easy environment to go back into, but I figured it out. But sadly, my body kind of used the heart attack as a kind of, oh, okay. I'm not very happy in other areas too. So about 8 months after the heart attack, I started experiencing some pain in my wrist and in my neck when I was playing and conducting the show. Mm-hmm. Long story short, I was in Puerto Rico with Lin-Manuel Miranda playing the leading role, and we're halfway through a show and I'm literally in so much pain. I've got tears rolling down my face and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I fought that injury for probably 7 months. And in the end, I had to quit. And I thought that I would be just quitting Hamilton. And at some point when I was, you know, refreshed and rested, that I would go back to some form of show. But 2 months later, my specialist said, we think you need to do something else. You are sufficiently compromised physically.
Wow.
So I was faced with a complete career change. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, people, you know, rightly say, well, that must have been incredibly difficult. And it was. You know, I'm not putting any of that experience down at all. It was bumpy, to say the least. But I think the thing that got me through it was the responsibility that I felt. Mm-hmm. And the responsibility is driven from, I strongly believe that I was meant to music direct Hamilton because it brought the heart attack when it brought the heart attack. And it empowered all the research and all the readings and the writings that I've now done to help other people avoid going through the same thing. That's why I was given Hamilton. Not to be, you know, am I a good music director? Yes. Are there better music directors on the planet? Absolutely. Am I meant to be doing the work that I am doing now because I was a music director? Absolutely. And the truth in that is very clear for me. Which kind of what gets me out of bed every morning.
I love that. That's powerful. That's, you know, that's a true sense of purpose.
Yes, I think so. And, you know, I think it's funny, isn't it? You know, we see so much surrounding, you know, find your purpose. I do think that we have to lean into, yes, there is an opportunity to find it, But we have to lean into the fact that it will find you. And it will only, and I think this bit is really important, it will only find you when you are ready to receive it.
There's something on my mind around time and timing, and that resonates with what you just said as well, because one question that came up for me is you know, when you want to help other people, when you consult and advisory, you recommend other people that are running towards that brick wall, for example, or other supporting people around that. My thought was, so where do you intervene as they're going towards that, and what would be the right moment? And another thing that I'm hearing you say is, you know, that's not what happened with me, and I'm happy with how my life turned out. So if had there been an intervention for you at exactly the right moment, you might not have been here. So,
well, I think, you know, that you've just hit the biggest frustration in my business, because ultimately people don't think they need to do anything before they reach the pain point.
Yeah.
So in answer to the question,
that's the most complex thing about burnout, right?
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of the work that I do is painting the picture of what if. And what I mean by that is people don't stop to really understand the pain that they're in. They don't stop to understand the physical condition that they're in, the psychological condition that they're in. And it's only when they stop and they start asking themselves some serious questions do they start realizing the answers. Now, none of this happens quickly. This is a slow burn. So in answer to the question, you know, that my work kind of ranges from people who are, okay, I just had a heart attack, I need to figure some stuff out, read your story, you might be able to help, right the way through organizations that have employee retention issues, and they've kind of figured out that it's largely associated with stress and burnout. 95% of HR managers think that burnout is like the primary sort of saboteur of employee retention, and that's statistically been proven. So they're on the money there. But it's interesting, because I I'm thinking right back to my heart attack now, because the very first book that I read after the heart attack was The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. I jumped into some work with a great psychologist, Michael Klein, in San Francisco, and you know, we didn't have to dig too deeply to understand that perfectionism had played a very significant role in my life. And so he was like, you should read this book. And I read it, and it's incredible. And it started my journey to, you know, perfect equilibrium. But for me, the irony about that book is that perfectionists value their perfectionism. Yeah. In the same way that people who are busy value their busyness, in the same way that people who are stressed in some way, shape or form value the stress that they feel, because they think that it's focus and motivation, etc. And the reason why I've just said all that is, for me, prior to the heart attack, there were no gifts in imperfection. After the heart attack, there was a huge gift in imperfection. And I think that realization was given to me because it's partly my job to change the dialogue so that people see the gifts or want the gifts prior to the heart attack. And it's not just perfectionism. It's so much, so much more. But that's the general message.
I love that idea that indeed, there is value in perfectionism until there is that tipping point, right? Where it's over calibrated, where, you know, it's working. And then when suddenly that's the only thing you have to rely upon, Oh, it's not working so well anymore. Now we're over calibrated to just one tool in the tool chest.
Right.
And I think that's such a powerful thing. You know, in a lot of the values work that I do with my clients, we talk about, you know, how do we lean on our values and how do we calibrate, right? When we're over calibrated to just one, how can we recalibrate to create some equilibrium, right? To create so that you don't just have that single tool in the tool chest. So what other tools have you added to your repertoire? What other tools do you lean into now? If it's not just the perfectionism and not just the, you know, I love Brené Brown. She also has a, you know, one of my favorite terms is hustling for your worthiness, right? Not just the hustle for worthiness. I'm going to go out and prove who I am and be the best and do it all of the time.
Well, kind of my research into perfectionism led actually to a TEDx talk called Reframing Perfectionism, The Vital Need for Change. And my argument within that talk is, you know, the message about perfectionism is that it's bad, it's a dirty word, we should get rid of it. I strongly dispute that approach. And the reason why is that, you know, what are we supposed to do? Lower the bar and then fail ourselves? No. And so we can keep the bar where it is, but how we get to the bar, or how we should get to the bar, is the introduction of self-compassion. And that was my biggest kind of discovery, Christine Neff's work on self-compassion has been huge for me in all sorts of ways. I wrote a kid's book about it, Captain Perfection and the Secret of Self-Compassion. And, you know, it's so important. We have such ability as human beings to be compassionate to others, but we suck at being compassionate to ourselves. Yeah. So finding that language, building that language, is so important, allows us to achieve in kinder and healthier ways. Self-awareness has been huge for me. Tasha Urich's work on self-awareness has been massive. Just the realization that we don't know, you know, 95% of us think that we're self-aware, but the actual number is somewhere between 12 and 15%.
That's crazy. How do you even measure that?
this is through Dr. Urich's research.
We're going to have very rich show notes here, by the way.
There you go. No, she's done really valuable work. And, you know, it's little wonder that we, you know, experience so much stress and burnout, because 80% of us at any one time are walking around thinking that we know what we're, you know, what we're feeling, what we're thinking, all of that stuff. Those two things, self-compassion, self-awareness, for sure. Big subjects for me.
Yeah, I love that. I know before my burnout, if you had asked me, like, oh, are you on a bad path? Are you on a road to nowhere? Basically, no, I'm fine. No, totally. Things are going great. No, I've got this under control.
And that's a lot of the battle with the work. You know, what the fix, if you like, of burnout is the easy bit, you know, we know what to do. The hard bit is inspiring people to embrace the work before the pain point. And it's that shift in psychology, and often all it is how much better can I make you by not screwing with your system so much that you notice, but all I'm really doing is optimizing. And that's how I try and sell it. It's optimization, because it is really. But you have to find an angle. It's that whole kind of marketing thing over everything else. But it's interesting for sure.
And in addition to that, you know, even if you're one of the people that does crash and burn, you're a beautiful example of turning that into something very purposeful and very valuable and very heartfelt and very
good. Absolutely. You know, I think I've met several people fairly recently actually that have burned out significantly, and you know, like we could talk for forever about this stuff, but you know, they choose not to use that message in their organization.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how much encouragement I try and give them, because I strongly believe that people who do go through stuff, there is a responsibility kind of to kind of go, listen, I wasn't all right because of this. And if we fix this, then everyone else will be all right and won't have to go through what I go through. But people don't put their hand up and, you know, either ask for help before the pain point or say, listen, this happened to me after the pain point.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand why. And it all comes down to trust. And they just don't trust that there won't be any repercussion and all of that. And that's another whole separate thing that I'm working very hard to try and fix. It's building that trust bridge so that, you know, individuals can, you know, be open with their managers when they go through all of this stuff. Managers can be open with C-suite. Even C-suite can be open with themselves, because that's often a challenge too. Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting work for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so many facets to it. I'm curious, though, what is one thing that you wish for all of our listeners to embrace?
Oh, only one thing?
start with one. Let's see what we get.
All right, let's start with one. I've realized that ultimately my heart attack was born out of just not knowing me. And so I'm always a huge advocate of the beginning of the self-awareness journey by asking three questions. Number one, what am I thinking? Number two, what am I feeling? Number three, what am I sensing? And the reason why those three questions are powerful is that the answers obviously give us further questions, or the opportunity for further questioning, which will produce more answers, et cetera. So we can keep burrowing down. And the more you ask those questions, the more you discover who you are. And, you know, that discovery then becomes really good information to have for prevention. So, you know, how am I feeling? Stressed. Well, why are you stressed? What are the stressors? Is it the environment? Is it the work? Is it the people you're around, et cetera, et cetera? You're then empowered to do something about it, which keeps you away from the pain point. But I also think self-compassion, you know, this would be number two, self-compassion. You know, figure out how to start talking to yourself as you would do a best friend, because if you can get that right, it really is a superpower. I'm a strong believer in that one.
Yeah, absolutely. The world is certainly lacking a huge amount of compassion, but including that self-compassion. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Thank you. Two good ones.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Double on that.
Well, and thank you so much, Julian, for sharing your story and sharing your journey and you know, for having the real courage it takes to talk about this in a frank and candid and open way. I think there is so much power in the learning that is available in that. And you're doing important work out there in the world. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you helping me spread the message. It's been lovely to be here.
Yeah. And thank you, everyone out there, for listening. If you appreciated this episode, please do be sure to share it. You can also subscribe to our podcast. You'll find us online on all of the podcast platforms and apps. So please do make sure you subscribe so you're the first to learn about new interesting topics and new interesting conversations like this one with Julian. We'd also love to hear your feedback, guest suggestions, and topic requests. Let us know what's on your mind in the workplace. Until next time, bye.
Bye.